This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, confirmation of the discovery of an amino acid in cometary dust, new ways to date the formation of the solar system, and stellar populations not as simple as once thought. In 2004, the Stardust spacecraft flew past the comet Vilt 2, passing through the dense gas and dust surrounding the nucleus on January the 2nd. Using a special collector containing a grid of aerogel, the probe sampled the particles in the comet's tail, later returning them to Earth in a capsule which parachuted back into the Earth's atmosphere on January the 15th, 2006. Over the last 3 years, scientists around the world have been analysing the particles collected in the aerogel samples to investigate the chemical composition of the comet. Preliminary results published in the journal Science in December 2006 showed the presence of various organic compounds in the returned samples. While the presence of some of these compounds may have been due to contamination of the aerogel during manufacture of the spacecraft, a comparison analysis of flight spares, aerogel samples which were manufactured at the same time and in the same way but never flown, showed a lower abundance of these chemicals, indicating that at least some of the organic material came from the cometary debris. One such chemical was the amino acid glycine. Preliminary results showed that it was present in some samples, but were not conclusive enough to show that it came from the comet rather than from contamination. New results presented at a meeting of the American Chemical Society in Washington, D.C. during August, a team have determined that the amino acid was present in cometary material collected by the Stardust mission. Glycine is an amino acid used by living organisms to make proteins, and one of the fundamental building blocks of life as we know it, so finding this sort of molecule in space could have implications for the abundance of life in the universe. Led by Jamie Elsila at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, the team conducted isotopic analysis of the samples to try and determine the origin of the chemical. Organic compounds contain carbon atoms, but not all carbon is the same. Different isotopes exist with the same number of protons, but different numbers of neutrons, giving the carbon atoms slightly different weights. Carbon-12 has 6 protons and 6 neutrons in its nucleus, while carbon-13 has an extra neutron and is slightly heavier. Glycine molecules from Earth contain less carbon-13 than those from space, so measuring the relative amounts of each isotope in a sample can distinguish between glycine from Earth-based contaminants and glycine from comet debris. As molecules of gas pass through the aerogel, some of them stuck to the aluminium foil lining the sides of the tiny chambers that hold the aerogel in the collection grid. The team analysed traces of material from the foil and had to refine their equipment to make it accurate and sensitive enough to analyse such tiny samples. Their results show that the glycine returned by Stardust has an extraterrestrial carbon isotope signature containing more carbon-13 than samples from Earth and ruling out contamination. The results have been accepted for publication in the journal Meteoritics and Planetary Science. The problem of determining the sequence of events during the formation of the early solar system is one that requires knowledge of the precise timescales for the physical and chemical processes occurring in the accretion disk. In a similar way to the carbon dating of artifacts here on Earth, there are processes which can be used to date events in the early solar system. One such commonly used technique relies on radioactive decay process of aluminium. Stable aluminium atoms have an atomic mass of 27, but one isotope, aluminium-26, is relatively short-lived, decaying to magnesium-26 with a half-life of 730,000 years. Compared to the age of the solar system, some 5 billion years, this is a relatively short time period, so all of the original aluminium-26 in the early solar system must now have decayed. The origin of the aluminium-26 is not certain. It may be that it was present in the cloud from the start, created in a nearby supernova explosion, or generated within the solar system itself. Careful analysis of the isotopic composition of meteorite samples can yield a sequence of events, but the accuracy of this method relies on the assumption that the original aluminium-26 was evenly distributed around the solar system. If it was generated by a source outside the solar system, then it may not have been well mixed with the rest of the material in the nebula, resulting in unreliable age estimates. In research published in Science on August the 21st, Johann Villeneuve and colleagues at Nancy University in France describe new techniques they have developed which allow very precise measurements of magnesium isotopes. Comparing samples from different objects, the researchers show that the Earth and several components of primitive chondritic meteorites all lie on the same evolutionary line. Their analysis confirms that the ratio of radioactive aluminium-26 to stable aluminium-27 was uniform in the early solar system, confirming that this process is a reliable chronometer of events at that time. Stars come in a variety of sizes. Many are of a similar size to our own Sun, but there are plenty of stars which are much, much larger. For every star that is 20 times the mass of our Sun, there should be roughly 500 stars with the Sun's mass or less. The trouble with studying stellar populations, however, is that the brighter stars often outshine their dimmer companions, making it hard to determine how many stars of each type there are in a given star cluster or galaxy. For some time, the standard assumption has been that there is a simple function relating how many stars of each type are present in a given cluster. This relationship is known as the stellar initial mass function. The idea is that if the population of large stars is measured, then this relationship can tell you about the rest of the stellar population, the dimmer stars that can't be seen directly. But a recent study, published in the Astrophysical Journal, has thrown doubt on this long-held and widely used assumption. This is not the first such study, but these new results provide extra information which adds to the picture. Led by Gerhard Mührer at Johns Hopkins University, the researchers used a combination of optical images from telescopes at the Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory in Chile and ultraviolet observations from the GALAX satellite to show that many galaxies do not form a lot of massive stars, yet still have plenty of lower mass counterparts. The ultraviolet images are sensitive to somewhat small stars, three or more times more massive than the Sun, while the filtered optical images are only sensitive to the largest stars, with 20 or more times the mass of the Sun. The problem is particularly severe in more diffuse, faint galaxies. The initial mass function would predict a certain mass for the stellar content of the galaxy based on the light visible from the larger stars, but these new results show that there may be far more faint stars in such galaxies than was previously thought. And finally, August the 25th saw the 400th anniversary of the day when Galileo Galilei first showed his improved telescope design to government officials in Venice. Although he did not invent the telescope, he heard of the idea and improved upon it, showing it to the Senate as a means of strategic advantage in battle, allowing their armies to see distant enemy ships long before they reached shore. It was still some months before he turned the device to the heavens and made his famous drawings of the planet Saturn. Telescopes have come a long way in the intervening years. August also saw the opening of the world's largest telescope, the Gran Telescopio Canarias, or GTC, located on La Palma in the Canary Islands. With a 10.4-meter mirror made up of 36 hexagonal segments, the GTC is larger than any other current ground-based optical telescope. Originally scheduled to open in 2003, the project has taken somewhat longer than expected, but it may provide a useful testbed for technologies planned for the next generation of optical telescopes with mirrors 25 meters and more in diameter.